Hey, hello, welcome back to Let Into Gold. I forgot the name of our podcast for a moment there. We're just going to roll with it. The podcast about how alchemy became chemistry and all the funny things that happen in between. I am Evie. I don't know what's going on here at any given time.
I'm Thea. Sometimes I know what's happening.
Much more often than I do.
I don't feel like I do right now, though, but that's for the same reason that we missed our last episode, which is school started.
Hooray for school. Also, fair warning to everybody here. I am recording this while my laptop is connected to my phone hotspot because my apartment Wi-Fi decided to fuck off and die. So, like, if anything catastrophic happens in the middle of this, it's not my fault. I'm good at my job, I promise. It's my landlord's.
We'll just hope that Wi-Fi keeps going.
Fingers crossed!
Fingers crossed. So, for those of you who died last week, I have excellent news for you. There is hardly any real science in this episode.
Yes! Oh, thank fuck.
We are going with basically the polar opposite, because if we want to get into the actual science, frankly, it's not my area of interest, and there's a lot, and gross.
You have no idea how relieved I am to hear these words, Thea.
We're talking about air this week.
All right. See, last week I was like, oh, water, that's pretty simple and fundamental. And then it wasn't. So I am still a little afraid.
So the thing about air is that we had a lot of funny ideas about it. And we had so many funny ideas that I filled a whole episode with it. And most of those ideas ended up turning into like theology and stuff instead of science. So I don't trace them all the way up to the present because then they turn into like theology. And that's not what we're about here.
Yeah, fuck religion.
Hey! On Rosh Hashanah.
I forgot. Oh, we are off to such a good start here.
So, one thing we've known since we started thinking about how the world worked is that you can't live without air, right?
I would hope that would be something we would have found out pretty fast.
Like, people are pretty clear pretty early on, even if we don't know that we even have lungs or how they work, we know that if you don't have air, you die.
They got that one right.
We did. And since that's the one thing we know we can't live without, clearly that's where your soul is.
Okay. I'm tracking the logic, I guess.
Like, that's pretty much the assumption. So when we talk about the ideas of air throughout like history, alchemically, mystically, it was like, have you ever heard the phrase the breath of life?
I have, yes.
And like, sometimes that's just, oh, we do like rescue breaths with CPR, you need your air to live. But a lot of the time, it is associated with the concept of a soul. The concept of, and not always just a soul either, because a similar concept was associated when biologists started trying to figure out what makes something alive. Right?
Okay.
Why is a plant alive but a rock isn't? With your gut, you can say, well, obviously a plant's alive, a rock's not. But why? Scientifically, how do we define life? And so for a while, there was this theory called vitalism, which was the belief that there was a spark of something.
All right.
Spark of life. Breath of life, air, vitalism, this vital thing. And we don't know what it is and we can't find it, but that's what makes the thing alive.
Magic.
But we're scientists here.
Right, so we don't call it magic.
Ignore the alchemy in the back. Ignore that ritual. There's nothing mystical about this. We're definitely not drawing symbols on this tablet over there.
Ignore the quest for eternal life. That doesn't have anything to do with this episode.
Clearly. And so, life and air just always intertwined. It's one of the four elements, much like water. However, it was not one of the five Chinese elements.
Okay.
I touched on that briefly in the last episode, that there were the four Greek elements, usually called, they've been called like the classical elements, and those are pretty similar throughout a lot of cultures, India and a few others, I think Islamic countries. China has a different set, and air is not in that set. But they have a similar concept that I'm going to say right now that I am not equipped to do more than touch on without a lot more research. But this concept of air being tied to life is a theme that is found when talking about qi.
Okay. I've heard the word in anime, probably.
Probably in anime, yeah. And it's like Chinese medicine, philosophy, healing, associated with some Western kooky ideas nowadays, which isn't necessarily true to the source, but
The long grand tradition of stealing Asian mysticism for Western New Agey bullshit.
New Agey bullshit, that's the words I was looking for. It's the, like, occultists, that's it. Western occultists tend to, like, take it and say that it's things that it isn't necessarily, but I don't know enough about it to say for sure what it is, and I have to be very careful about finding my sources for that to make sure I don't accidentally go off of said New Agey bullshit.
I was about to say.
You gotta be careful with those sources. But I do know that it's life energy and it's associated with air.
That is kind of, this is kind of tangential, I guess, but you know, I speak Japanese, and the Japanese word for energy is ki. And that is also associated with, I think it's related to or the same kanji as like steam, so it's also associated with air in that way.
That is 100% the same idea. There was steam and clouds in some of the things that I read, and I thought it was pronounced ki until I clicked on the encyclopedia article to make it pronounce it, and it said chi, but it's the qi. So I'm betting it's a similar, don't quote me on this, I don't have sources, but I'm going to guess that there was some cultural trading going on there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, most of kind of the reason I brought it up is because there is so much influence in Japanese language and writing from Chinese. That's where kanji come from.
I feel like we need to go back and edit the start of this episode and say this is the one where Evie knows things Thea doesn't.
Look, occasionally I have to get the chance to be smart on this podcast.
I know nothing about any of this.
Now you know how I feel every other episode.
I mean, to be fair, I do feel like this in a lot of conversations that aren't on the podcast.
Fair enough.
I love being educated about things I don't know. Except when I have homework about it. I'm ignoring all of my homework to make this episode. It's fine.
Well, I mean, you're a scientist. This is science. It's sort of, like, justifiable.
Air is definitely related to biochemistry, bio-nanotechnology, and polymers homework, for sure.
Hey, I don't know if it isn't.
It very much is not.
You're the expert. I'll take your word for it.
The only homework I have right now is about light, so... Anyway. tragic fact. I should not have clapped. That probably was bad for the sound.
It's fine. I could edit it out if it, like, peaks the audio.
Ooh. So there's the four elements things, and here's a place where we can do a little definition split that is going to be important for things that we'll probably do in a couple more episodes about later.
Okay.
Because when you talk about like the Greek elements that everyone knows, there's either four or five, depending on how you count them. It's either water, earth, fire, air, or water, earth, fire, air, and ether.
Oh, right. We mentioned ether in the first episode, and I made fun of it because I thought it was kind of stupid.
Well, because ether is a lot, shows up a lot in like sci-fi and fantasy as being the woo element. The magic element, right. Basically what it was we didn't know what air was. We just knew that there's like something here because we breathe it. If we don't have it, it's bad. There's something moving when the wind goes. So when they were trying to figure out what the world was made of, they looked up at the sky and they said, well, it looks pretty different. Like, there's the stuff around us down here, And then there's the pretty blue stuff up there.
So we got our five elements. Fire, earth, water, air, and cooler air.
Pretty much. And then it gets into some stuff, like I said, we'll probably do a full episode about this, where ether was used for some of the original theories about what was space made of. But ether is pretty much the sky. And air is like that stuff that we breathe that's associated with life.
Sure.
Which I thought that was important to clarify because I did not know that distinction. I just thought ether was that thing that they used in funny fantasy stories to be the magic stuff. And like, there's definitely some magic stuff associated with it because sky, it's far away. We don't know what it does. Maybe it does magic. People have funny ideas.
Well, we've been to space now. I feel like we didn't go through any magic on the way there.
I'm fighting the urge to say that's what they want you to think because I don't want to bring that kind of energy to a factual podcast.
Welcome to our science podcast, guys. The moon landing was faked.
Don't even say that in front of me. I will fight for the validity of the moon landing. I didn't say the moon landing was faked. I said maybe there was magic on the moon. There's a difference. NASA, please hire me.
Right. Of course. Moon landing, real. Space magic, also real.
Exactly. So anyway, we have the four elements, and we move on, and there's the theory of vitalism, which was that idea that there's like this spark of life, and that traces back to the ideas of air, and I went completely in the wrong order, because in the middle of those, tying them together, was pneuma, and that's P-N-E-U-M-A. That's like the same Greek word we get, like pneumatic, for like things to do with air moving, with the lungs.
So wait, is this a different magic fifth element now?
No, pneuma was like the word for the theory of the breath of life idea.
Okay.
But it was further back than vitalism because the idea was that that spark of life was made out of the four elements, but it was the combination of fire and air.
All right.
Because you need air to breathe, and that's totally where you have like your soul and stuff. And then fire is like the little spark that makes the life start going.
Okay, I can see where they got air from. How did they wind up with fire?
Because fire is something with like energy in it, but we don't know what it's made of.
Right? Okay.
You can't pick up fire. It's very misunderstood. And so it's also just like historically in religions, mythos, it's tied to life.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. It's like, we don't know how this works, but we don't know how this other thing works either, so maybe they're the same.
Yeah. The other thing that I forgot to touch on is that the idea of life and breath and air is rooted in a lot of different religions. There's a lot of, like, sky gods, sky goddesses, who are, like, the start of a pantheon, the part of the creation story. I know that for Judaism, the belief is that life starts at first breath. Can't really say for others. I know that there was a Hindu god of the wind that is associated with a creation story. So it's a very common association for a very long time. Anyway, so we start with the four elements. We move through pneuma. We come to vitalism. And eventually we are like, vitalism got disproved right around when spontaneous generation got disproved, when we were like, okay, we're figuring out how things actually work. We know what cells are.
We can't just say life just appears out of nowhere anymore. We've reached the point where that's not defensible.
Life is not magic. And then this is where it does the flip over into religious things, where most of the time, as far as I'm aware, in my experience, if you're talking about the breath of life or the spark of life, it's in a religious context and it's about like sapience and like souls. It's not about like plants are alive. It's about like, why are we able to think? Do things go to heaven? And that's not for us. So now we get to move on to my favorite thing.
Yes. All right.
Phlogiston theory.
It sounds like something you have, like something stuck in your throat or something. Sorry, what was that?
Phlogiston theory.
Okay, what is that?
So, we were talking about fire, right?
Yes.
And as I said, fire is something we didn't really understand. It's not really something you can touch. You'll regret it very much if you do. It's not something that you can hold. You can't say this is what fire is made of, or at least you couldn't. Do you know what fire is made of?
Wait, I actually, isn't it just like energy, released energy?
It is. Have you ever been shown like the fire triangle?
No.
Okay, so it's the kind of thing that you get shown either in scouting or when you have like a fire safety talk. And it's like the three things that you need to make a fire.
I wasn't paying attention in Girl Scouts.
I never even did Girl Scouts. So no judgment here. You need a fuel. You need a spark. And you need oxygen.
Okay.
You need something that's going to burn. You need a way to start it going. And you need oxygen to feed it. And then it's the energy that's being released. Things burn down. I could go into like how a burning reaction happens, but that probably wouldn't be very interesting.
No, I thought we promised no real science this episode. Come on.
We did. We promised
no real science. You can't snipe me 17 minutes in.
It releases carbon dioxide. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a promise breaker.
Shame.
We didn't know what air was. And what that meant is we didn't know what oxygen was. Right? Because that's part of air.
Sure, yeah.
So we didn't know how fire worked. So we have all these scientists who are looking at, like, this burns, this doesn't. What's the difference? Why do things burn sometimes but not always? And phlogiston theory. The roots of it were put in place by Johann Joachim Becher and refined by his student Georg Ernst Stahl at the start of the 18th century. And the belief was that for a fire, you needed the fuel, you needed the spark, and you needed for your fuel to be something that contained phlogiston.
Okay.
Phlogiston is something inherent in a material that makes it capable of being on fire. It's like the essence of the element of fire in a thing. Wood has a ton of phlogiston in it, that's why it burns so good. Stone doesn't have phlogiston in it, that's why you can't burn stone.
All right. This sounds like it was a wrong name for a real thing. Am I wrong?
Not quite. Because it was pretty thoroughly misproved by Antoine Lavoisier in the, like, 1760s. Because, for a variety of reasons. Basically, he pointed out that if this were true, when something burned, it would have to weigh less because the phlogiston would be catching on fire and then leaving. It would be burning away, right?
Doesn't it, though? Like, I mean, when things burn, I mean, charcoal weighs less than wood.
True, but that is, I have to get in the science now to answer this question. I'm sorry.
Damn it. I entrapped myself. Okay, continue.
So the issue came up with metals because you can light some metals on fire. Depending on which one.
Okay.
But they will weigh more when they're done burning.
Okay.
And that is because as they burn, they are reacting with the oxygen in the air. And the oxygen is binding on, you're getting like oxides. Iron oxide is the example that was used in the paper I was reading. And so there's not something burning away. So even if sometimes it'll weigh less, it doesn't always. And that means that if phlogiston were correct, it would not be following conservation of mass, which is basically you can't destroy matter. Everything has to go somewhere.
Ah, yes, the law of equivalent exchange. In order to gain something, something of equal value must be lost.
You aren't wrong. And that's why I said that it makes carbon dioxide when things burn, because when you burn wood, it looks like it weighs less. That's because it's releasing gases. It's carbon dioxide. The carbon
right,
in the
yeah.
wood is bonding with the oxygen. You get CO2. And then what's left? Yeah. And so that also, once we learned that oxygen existed, thank you, Lavoisier, that is how we were able to start figuring out, you know, why are these things flammable versus these other things? Why do things set on fire? If there is a particularly flammable environment, usually high oxygen, or there's something else so flammable But also the fire will go out if you get rid of the oxygen source.
Right.
That's like when you have an oil fire and you're supposed to smother it. Because if you put water on it, it'll spread the fire worse. That's because if you smother it, there's no access to oxygen. The fire can't keep burning.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And that did lead into, I forgot I was going to briefly touch, but I don't have any brain melting specifics. There's just a lot of modern day experiments now that we understand what the atmosphere is made of. We now know that the oxygen in the air and some of the other things in the air too can be an active part of a reaction that's going on.
All right.
Because that was one of the things that was, it took a bit for us to grasp, is that the air is not just a neutral thing.
It's doing stuff.
There's stuff in it that can interact with other things. And so you can't just assume that the only things that are reacting are the things you're pouring in your beaker.
Sure.
And that is why we've figured out ways to make environments where you can assume that.
By taking out the air?
Sometimes. I don't know if you've ever seen, I don't know if this is a general life experience or just like a chemist's life experience, but there are these boxes that are, they're like made out of metal with a glass pane on the front, and they're like big bulky bolts.
I can tell you already, this is not a general life experience. Your experiences are not universal.
Fair enough. And they have these gloves sticking out of them.
Okay.
And they're like inside out because there's a lot of air inside, and so it pushes them out. And then you stick your hands in those gloves and they go inside the box. And then you can do experiments inside of that box. And it's airtight and it's connected to a cylinder of gas that's pumping in nitrogen and it's pumping out anything else. And nitrogen is generally very inert, which means it won't react with a lot of stuff. And if it's not inert enough for the experiment you're doing, you can also do it with like argon. And so you have an environment that's completely full of nitrogen that has no oxygen in it, and you work with those great big gloves inside that box to do whatever experiment you need to do.
That sounds like it would be kind of clumsy.
I have never used one, but I would also assume so.
Like, I mean, I'm just imagining trying to do anything delicate wearing, like, gardening gloves or worse.
They look like gardening gloves. I don't know if they're thinner, but they look like gardening gloves, I think, because otherwise they'd, like, pop from the air pressure.
Sure.
But it's very, very important that air does not get in there, because this is usually, we do this when we're doing experiments with chemicals that if they are opened in the general atmosphere.
Explode?
With the oxygen, they will catch on fire or explode. Yes. There are chemicals where you open the lid and it will catch on fire.
That is a fucking high stakes balloon.
Yep. Can we call this episode, "That's a fucking high stakes balloon"?
We absolutely can.
So yeah. We figured out that phlogiston was not an inherent part of materials. We figured out that oxygen existed, and now we can do experiments without blowing up. Science.
Fantastic.
I am particularly fond of phlogiston because there's a webcomic that I enjoy that has like mad science, and I learned what phlogiston was because I Googled it after they had a panel where a character had a gun that shot phlogiston.
Which doesn't exist.
No, it was a phlogiston ray in the same vein as a death ray, which also doesn't exist.
Didn't Tesla build one?
Hmm?
A death ray.
I don't want to say conclusively without we should totally do an episode about Tesla.
We should, actually. We totally should. He deserves it.
Down right now. He does. Whether Tesla built a death ray, to be continued, after I do research.
Okay, I do want to tell the listeners that you just typed Tesla in our private chat in all caps.
I can't forget. We just said we were going to do it, so I can't forget.
It is important. It is very important.
I know off the top of my head that there was like a thing that he said that he built, and then there was like a massive chunk of forest leveled, but I have no idea how much of this is. You know, in internet rumors.
Yeah, gotta look more into that one.
Like, yeah. I stake my professional reputation on not saying that death rays exist if they don't actually. But magic is definitely on the moon, for the record.
For sure. Yes, of course. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Lead Into Gold.
Personally, I thought this was much better than the last one on account of having less science. But what did you think? We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at L2G Podcast on the Cursed Bird app and or contact us at leadintogoldpodcast@gmail.com. Can you tell I've stopped scripting these end bits? Anyways, thanks for listening. See you next month.